okay, how about I get us going? And this session, what we'll do, we're gonna have a teaching, and then I'm just gonna open it up for us to just do group chat and group troubleshooting. I'm trying to keep this kind of light today. But okay, I can't do that. Okay, I just confess it. I can't do the light thing. Okay, so for what it's worth, I am just so happy you guys are here, and I love talking about home and family and homeschooling. For those of you that I think everybody in the room knows this, but I don't know that everybody in the world knows this. And you know what? I may run a backup camera real quick. Let me do that because I have this feeling that sometimes this thing doesn't want to behave. You know what I mean? And as long as I don't mess up the stuff here, we'll see what we can do here. One of the things I think I loved the most about my life was the privilege that I had of being able to homeschool my children. And this is not going to work either. Okay, forget it. Forget it. Forget it. Okay, so we throw that away. Okay, but one of the greatest things that when I look back over my life, you know, there are a lot of things that you say, I might would do something different. I might would do something that would a totally different path now that I have the hindsight of being able to see where I ended up, where I landed. Well, I don't feel that way about homeschooling my children. I am so grateful for the blessing of being able to have them at home with me, for me to be able to teach them. I am grateful for even the methods that I believe God directed me along those paths. It's kind of funny now to kind of give you a little background. We homeschooled from the time Matt was turning 5 years old. He was 4 when we got started, but about to turn 5. Elizabeth was 2, about to turn 3. And we did all through the years until they graduated. And now at this time, Matt and Whitney are my daughter in love. She and Matt are homeschooling Oliver and Josh. And my goodness, I get to be here with them. And so this is kind of that second generation thing going on now. And of all the things I've ever done in my life, the one thing I would never take back, and no matter how mad the kids have gotten through the years, I'll just go ahead and say that they're normal. But no matter how much, no matter what has gone on, that's the one good thing I would never take back. There's a lot of other things I would change in my life, but the blessing, and I'm trying not to get teary about it, but the blessing of being a mother, being able to homeschool my children, totally not sorry, totally would never take it back. Would probably, if I could do anything over, I think I would read more books, play more times, be a lot less stressed, because there were times I did get stressed. I think if I could change anything, it would be that. But my goodness, it was my children's education. It was their life. It's hard for me to go back and say, I would do anything different. I think it was so important to me that no wonder sometimes I got afraid that they wouldn't get it. No wonder sometimes I got impatient when the process took longer than it really should have. No wonder whenever I missed it, I felt horrible and wished I could have taken it back. You know what I'm saying? However, the thing that of all the many, many things I've done in my life, the greatest success was that moment I got to see each of them graduate and move into their futures. And I knew what it took for them to get there. I knew what it took for me to be there at that very moment, and seriously would never take any of that back. So with that as a precept and a premise before I teach anything, if I had only one thing that I wish that you could take from this, it is how important these moments with your children really are. It's more than education. It's more than school. It is so much more. It's about having that moment to teach and to train, to disciple and dedicate your children up in the way that God is leading you. And I believe, by the way, that he's going to lead you. These are some presuppositions I've come to you and I unashamedly say, because there's no way you can follow a scope and sequence that's designed by someone else and truly not have gaps and holes and make mistakes. There's no way. And inevitably, say you decide you're going to follow their scope and sequence, the truth is things shift and change even within those particular scope and sequences. They change. Those programs change. In the course of 12, 13 years, they're going to change dramatically. So really and truly, it takes a lot of faith to go out and follow any single scope and sequence. But the one thing I know is going to be right on time, that's going to be spot on, it's going to give your children everything they need, is when we do what we're going to be talking about in my first point today. And that is getting away and hearing God. Getting away and hearing God. Now, I know that this is going to totally do this with Jeffrey Hardwick's topic tomorrow when he talks about hearing God all the time. That is a must session that goes right along with this. So I would love to invite you tomorrow evening at 7 to come and hear him, because he teaches it in a way that I just sit back and go, whoa, this is good stuff, you know. But you and I both can hear God. In fact, the one thing I know he's going to talk to you about is when you talk to him about homeschooling your children. He is faithful. He is true. He's not going to leave you or forsake you. He's not going to say, okay, this is on you. You go figure this out. You go in and figure out what you're to buy, what you're to do, what your day is supposed to look like. Nope. God was never, ever going to tell you that. If you hear it, it's not from him. I can just tell you that. There's a lot of other voices that would love to be the ones showing you the way. That's why there's a lot of money pumped into the homeschool movement. That's why there's a lot of money that's coming at families, a lot of options, a lot of decisions to be made. One of the reasons I've stepped back into the arena to teach on homeschooling is because I have heard so many mothers crying about how confusing, how frustrating, how hard it is. And those who know me know my heart is just always, it's going to be moved by the crying mother. Someone asked me years ago, they said, so how long do you plan on doing ministry? And it was kind of a funny question, you know, but I had to say that my answer still is the same. I said, as long as there's another crying mom, as long as there's another hurting person, as long as there's a person who needs some encouragement, empowerment, some equipping, that's where I step back in, and that's where I come along, because I'm not by all means anything special. It's just I care, and I love moms. I love dads. I love these kids. The kids at homeschool are my favorite. I'm just going to be really honest. I graduated myself from public school. I'm that very person who argued the benefits of public school for many years until God said, nope, you're going to homeschool. But I remember my objection was, get this, socialization. And because I loved learning. I'm right now getting my master's degree, and next term, I've already got a peek at it. It's on families and transforming families. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a great study. And I love studying. I love learning. That is a Christian college, a Christian university. However, it is a university, and I've enjoyed my classes, but you know something? I love nothing quite like I loved homeschooling, ever, ever. There's just something about it. I believe that you have to get past the stuff and get down to the things that really matter, or you just don't last. You don't have staying power. One of my friends, Ray Perry, she's another homeschool speaker. She's also a business speaker, entrepreneurs speaker. She and I have been friends for a long, long time, since I remember talking to her for the first time in 1994. And she was homeschooling in Alabama, and somehow the Lord put us together. of all the people in the world. Our husbands used to always say, oh my goodness, when they're together, there cannot be any other oxygen in the room because they're going to be using it all up. And I just laugh because I think, true, guilty, totally guilty about this. But I love Ray. And Ray told me one day, we were having this conversation, you know, our heart has been for the homeschool movement. And she and I were on, we both were on a traveling circuit for a long time, going to all the conventions. And one of our conversations, she said, you know, you can do this thing for about 3 years in the flesh. And after that point, there is a place where you have got to be Holy Spirit led. Otherwise, it gets so hard, so exhausting. I think that today, from what I'm hearing and seeing in homeschooling that was said a long time ago, when the movement, by and large, had a lot of leadership, that the leadership were Spirit-filled, their whole basis was a Christian worldview. They were committed to biblical homeschooling and hearing God for the homeschool. And there was a different atmosphere. I don't know how to do it, quite frankly, with curriculum being the driving force, with a curriculum company setting the pace, so I just confess that up front, that you're going to find with me that I am all about hearing God. I'm all about going back to some old paths that are way older than some of these companies. Some of these companies have not even been around, but since I stopped homeschooling, if that tells you, they haven't had the longevity. So they haven't had the proven results, is the best way I can put that. They've had what they are providing curriculum, and it's still untested, but the good old way has been, what scripture calls the good old way, has been around for millennia. And so when I say pulling back to get away so you can get alone and hear God, I believe He has a word for your home. He has a word for your homeschool. He has a word for each and every child. He has a plan for your home, for your homeschool, and for each and every child. He is not going to fail you. I know that. I've watched Him through the years, and how he was so sweet and so tender to me all through those years of homeschooling. You know, I never had one thing that my children needed, the scope or the sequence. I've never had one time where He left me out there flailing, going, I don't know what's next. Now, I know one time I wasn't hearing Him very well, and I do remember what happened with that. I have a funny story about that, because what it was the year Elizabeth was right at 12 years old. Now, she was my daughter. She was my second child, and she still wasn't reading, not by the standards of what I say. You know, I want for my children to be able to pick up the Bible and to be able to read it in our family devotions. And when they are reading it well, reading it with delight, I feel like that's where they're totally reading. Now, some people may have different standards. Some may consider their child that's sounding out am as being able to read. I didn't consider it that. I wanted for them to be able to study anything that they could put their hand to be able to go out and research. That's when I considered them officially reading. But here we were at 12 years old, and the child was really struggling. Now, here's the deal. We'd gone through so many curriculum. We used the same things that I used with Matt. I bought extra stuff. I remember one time just coming to the Lord and saying, okay, God, I need you to help me. She is almost 12 years old. I need to know what I'm needing to do, because it's not happening. I don't understand why some days it's like she reads well, some days she doesn't. I was so confused. And so here's the deal. The Lord told me, I heard Him say, Cindy ministered to her heart. And I remember going, okay, I don't think you heard me. I did not say anything about her behavior or anything like that. I said, she's not reading good. God, she needs, what do I buy? And He said again, Cindy, minister to her heart. And I thought, okay, well, we're about to summer. What I'm going to do is, until God tells me what to buy, I'm just going to call school off and for the rest of the summer. And, you know, we were right there at it. And so I thought, we'll just have some fun and I'll minister to her heart. Yeah, God. And so it happened to be during that summer that we had so many moments of her just coming up and saying, Mom, what does God say about me? What does God have to say about me? Or, Mom, do you really think this about me? You know, I'd say something and she would come back with that. And it was a season that I look back, she was kind of frustrated because she was in a house full of readers and researchers, people who love to read. I love to write. That's very frustrating for a child that's just not quite there. And she was beginning to personalize the defeat and the frustrations instead of hearing what we had to say great about her. She was already beginning to formulate stories of who she was and what her capabilities are. Kids do that in school. If they feel like that there's something that they're not doing well, they tend to do that. And that summer really humbled me. But here's the funny thing. There was no school. There was no more curriculum. I mean, I didn't find another book. We get to about to start school back. And Elizabeth, one night, we were doing our family Bible reading. And Matt was going to read it. And she said, but Mama, I want to read it tonight. And I was thinking, uh-oh. Because I didn't want to compound failure. Do you know what I'm saying? I really wanted to encourage her. And she decides she's going to start reading. And out of the King James Version on top of that. And she starts reading and tears start streaming down my face because I realize that it wasn't about the program. It wasn't about my great teaching. Sorry. It wasn't about homeschooling. It was about ministering to her heart. She got the confidence to dare to read again. And she just read beautifully. I'm telling you guys, I was sitting there just weepy over this. It was so overwhelming, so beautiful. And here is the other thing. We did find out that one of the things she was having that kind of was about that age when it got a little bit better, she had a little lazy eye. So she was having some problems with the focus that she had on her books. We found that, you know, supporting her. I had some friends that talked to me as I shared some of the struggle. That's the importance of community and doing homeschooling in community. But some of them, they recommended like that I let her have like a little bookmark that she could just follow along. And sure enough, it helped. Large print books and a bookmark, and she was off. But my point is here. Okay, if I were going by a curriculum provider and what they said she needed to have before that time, after that time, at that age, I would have felt like a dismal failure as a mother, but I also would have put pressure on my child that really could have broken her. Many kids, I had a fiance that I was engaged to, that his whole story was about through the years, early years of school, of the teachers being very frustrated. He just couldn't read and he was struggling. He personalized that and still has some scars from that. Mike's husband, same thing. He was spanked at seven years old because he couldn't just read. The teacher didn't tell him how, didn't show him how, just spanked them. His saving grace was special education, where they sent him to a teacher that went back to the basics of phonics, thank God, and taught him how to read. Now he's got a law degree. So I'm just saying that here, the one thing that concerns me is when they get their agendas and they're apart from God and what God is really saying, he may say something totally different for your children. And I believe if we can hear him, that when we hear him, he's going to speak to us about what's needed for each and every child. Let me give an example. I just want you guys to come off your mic for a minute and tell me, what is the biggest need that you think your child has right now? Like, what do they need to learn right now? What is it that they don't have down? Just think of one child. Hop in. You got this. I know it.
Math, which
Math.
is hard for me because math and English are my loves. So the one thing that I actually like to teach, and my child just refuses to learn it from me. She doesn't want to learn it from me.
Now, how old is your child?
It's Josie is 17. And it's not arithmetic. My kids learn the lower math. That's fine. But when we get to algebra, they just look at me like, yeah, why?
I love it. I go, yeah, why? What are you kidding?
Oh no, math is so great though, people. Anyway, no, you said something earlier I want to talk to, because you said something, the key point about 2 minutes ago. If you make your identity, whether you're a failure or a success, based on your kid's failure or success, you're in trouble, because learning requires both. It requires failure and success. So if you try to stop all your kids' failures, you also stop all the learning.
That is
You're
so good.
actually,
Come on.
you kill it. You kill it. The part of learning is discovery. And how do you discover things? By trying things. Are you going to succeed every time you try something?
Absolutely not.
No. Which means there's going to be a lot of those times where you're going to do it wrong. How you react when your child does it wrong tells the child whether a mistake is a learning process or a mistake is bad. If you make mistakes bad, you stop learning. You derail it from the get-go. And that's, it's part of why curriculum, I also don't do curriculum very well. I actually got grounded from buying curriculum my 4th year of high school of homeschooling. My husband said, no more, you're not allowed to buy any. I did finally get him to back off on that for 5 in a row and for Konos.
That's
But no, the reason was is I would get all excited. I would buy my curriculum. We'd get ready to start. We'd get going. We'd get to lesson 4 or 5, and it would have something in there that I felt was completely stupid, because it was something he'd learned 2 years before, and they wanted me to explain something that it's like, dudes, we've been doing that for 2 years. Why would I have to ever explain that? It's just part of life. It's what we do. And about the 3rd week, he and I were both sick of it, and it would go back on the shelf, and I would never touch it again. And for the rest of the year, we'd go back to interest-led learning. And my husband took care of him for 2 weeks, or no, it was 12 days while I was gone. I went on a trip with my mom, and he was doing something in the backyard with Nick and realized he had just taught Nick something, which, you know, wasn't a huge revelation for me, but it was for him. And he learned it so easily because they were doing an activity in everyday life that made sense to both him and Nick. And Nick had no trouble. He learned it very easily. And so when I got back, he's like, huh, I now understand what you mean by this unschooling or homeschooling thing. I'm like, well, it's about time, but you know. And then he grounded me from buying curriculum. I'm like, yes, because I only bought it for him. He needed to see we were doing something. He needed to see progress, and progress was how many pages you'd finished. You know, I didn't need that. He needed that. So, yeah, that was kind of, I got grounded from curriculum.
I love it.
But no, you have to realize our identity is in Christ. It is not in an identity as a mom. It is not an identity as a wife. It is not an identity as a homeschooler. It is not an identity as an American. It's not, none of those other identities will ever complete you. You cannot be a failure or excess based on those other identities, because right. you're always going to have failures mm-hmm. in all those identities. You're going to.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
inevitable.
Yes.
What you have to look at is, why are you homeschooling? And are those goals being met? If they're not, why? Don't stress out about it. Look at why. Mm-hmm. And then make the changes you need to. I have kids that are definitely workbook kids. I don't understand them at all, but you know, hey, that is their personality. If they could just have a workbook and work through the workbook, and they think they're a lot like my husband. Okay, I admit it. We're opposites. But they like that structure. They work well in that structure. Mm-hmm. I had a child where I could not mark a problem wrong.
Right.
You have to erase it and let them do it again. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't mark it with any color or any marking on the page, because at the end of the day, that page would now not be perfect because it had my mark on it. Okay, this was a 5-year-old. I wasn't expecting that. But that's how she is. If you mark it wrong, she still hates math to this day.
Right.
From me marking her problems wrong.
Well, you know what? I found that with my kids, both in writing and in math. They wanted their paper to be nice. Well, surprise, I do too. So, I mean, I think we were so conditioned in school that this is how the learning takes place, but getting it at home with a child that's not ever been around school, you kind of can see some of the absurdities that are there and how hurtful that can be when you mess up their paper, you mess up their work. My kids, like if they copied something wrong, I would ask them, first of all, to proofread. That's one of the benefits of copy work in particular. We're going to talk about that over the summer. We're going to have Language Arts the Easy Way, because that book is being revised. So come back and hang with me a little on some of that. But part of the benefit of copy work, even from a very young age, is teaching them to proofread. Math, same thing. So what you're saying, if they can get in the habit of checking their work and finding their own errors, then it helps you not to be the one finding it. I totally believe in making mom the great person, not the bad guy, because there's a lot of it. You have to be the bad guy who says, get up, get your chores done, get your schoolwork done. And the last thing you want is for some contention to be over something that's so delightful as learning. But yeah, you know, Christine, I found that a lot with my kids, and both of them, they tend to, I think I call it excellence, but sometimes it can be perfectionism.
Perfectionism.
Yeah. but I mean, seriously, both of them are excellent at what they do. So I can't say that I think it's a bad quality to want to give perfect execution. You know, I think it's a great quality, especially if you think about someone shooting a gun. You do not want them being sloppy and just being any which way, you know, whoa, we'll just do what we want to do. No, perfect execution hits the mark. And so, you know, there are some things that are good like that, but there's some things that are very difficult. I love that you said that. Yeah. Well,
and it didn't change anything. Mm-hmm. I still erased the wrong answer.
Right.
I erased it and then asked her to do it again. So
yeah.
it she still had a perfect paper at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And she learned which ones were wrong. So she actually learned where her mistakes were, because mm-hmm. if there was a space that was empty, she knew, oops, that one wasn't right. You know, not a super difficult thing. And so it's learning to adapt. And you know me, I have a lot of kids, and every single one of them learns a little bit differently. There's mm-hmm. some that learn similar,
mm-hmm.
like certain kids that learn this way, sort of, but if you have to do it this way for this kid and this way, and it sounds like it's overwhelming, but it's not, because I don't use a curriculum.
Right.
So it's like
to your children. And
yeah. So
okay.
When they hit a snag, it's not, well, why can't you get this? Mm-hmm. It's okay, what's next? How do we get you past this hump so the next thing will work right? It's like with math. Mm-hmm. Okay, math is sequential. You have to learn math in an order.
Yeah.
When you skip a piece of that sequence, math gets hard.
Truly.
It's not because math is hard. It's because you missed one little piece. Mm-hmm. And 80% of the time, if you learn that little piece you missed, you're suddenly half a year or a year zoom. And then you hit the next little piece that you didn't understand.
Right.
It's because you kept going without getting that piece that you're stuck on a later piece. Not because math is hard. Not because you're unintelligent. Not because you're never going to get this. Not because how come you're so stupid in math. None of those are true. You're missing one little thing. If you were to make sugar cookies and leave the sugar out, are your cookies going to come out very good? No.
Very good. Come on.
That's good. No.
Well, no, that's exactly spot on. But I believe that there is such a there's such a facade as to what it takes for a child to really be educated that we think that there's some mystery. When you're saying, you just nailed it by saying that it is about, there are certain things that are sequential. It's kind of, I say the same thing about language arts. There's a process that makes it super easy. If you miss certain things in the process, it's going to make it a little tougher. And it's going to have some vulnerabilities that can be easily fixed. But it's about getting the process in all of it. I love what you said with that, because here's my funny story. When I was in third grade, my parents moved from Mississippi to Alabama. And in the middle of all that move and stuff, you would think that everybody would be on the same page. No, schools are never at the same page from one school to the next. And so I had some concepts that I missed that by the time I got to Alabama, they were in different spaces. Had, you know, some concepts there. The next year, another year later, we moved to North Mississippi, from Alabama to North Mississippi. Again, there were some differences in the things, and I missed some things. So probably some of the same similar things, because when I, anyway, and then we moved back to my hometown in Mississippi, in Laurel, Mississippi, during the next year. School. Okay. So there are four different schools and just those little spots, and math became very frustrating for me. That, and there were, it seems like there was, it's, of all the things, there's something funny about conjunctions and some of the rules of those. And some of the diagramming of sentences that I struggled with, which was very typical of a lot of people in school. But it was interesting where I saw the difference was actually not until, of course, homeschooling the kids, we got to see some of the process, but some of it was more them getting it. It wasn't so much me getting it, for me to have to solve the problems. And so when I went to college, the class I took a college math class, because I needed some catching up myself, I felt like. And I had all of the higher level maths when I was in school, but it had been, like I said, a billion years since I had been in school. And, you know, as the teacher began to teach precept upon precept, line upon line, there were times it stretched me. One of the best advice, the pieces of advice I was given was record the class. And then, you know, take everything down in notes, all the samples, you know, take pictures of the, what he was illustrating, and really just sit back and don't go, oh, I don't understand it, you know, because that was kind of where I was going. But him going precept upon precept upon precept, he totally, totally fixed some of the things I had battled with all through the years. And so it's exactly what you're saying. And I think here's the deal. Went through school, they let me have those vulnerabilities because they could not slow all these schools down to give the sequential. And I don't even know if they knew what the problem was. I made good enough grades to get by, but there were things I didn't get. And see, homeschooling, the biggest perk about, like, if you think about mathematically, for example, you can know your child well enough to know, hey, we need to stop here and we need to erase those problems, like you say, work back through this, make sure they really get this. You're going to need to do some extra problems to just make sure you got this. Let's practice this. Because, again, practice does help in things like math or writing. Spelling, it does make a big difference. So it's that being able to just pivot and be flexible and adaptable in your homeschool that makes a difference in making sure that they really have it and that they don't have holes and vulnerability later. That's good.
It's being able to do mastery, to honestly let the child master something before you go on to the next thing. You don't have to worry as much about a time frame. There isn't a, okay, we have to get to this page by today or, you know, we're in trouble. And it doesn't matter if my child is grade 4, but he's in grade 6 in math, mm-hmm. grade 4 in English,
right?
Grade 2 in spelling because it hasn't clicked yet. You know, I mean, you've got all these things where my kids used to be asked, what grade are you in? And they'd look at me, hey, mom, what grade am I? Because I was in states that didn't have recording. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to record grades. You didn't have to turn in grades. And so we didn't really do grade level in at home. They were, most of them were reading, you know, 10th to 12th grade by the time they were 10. I didn't worry about what grade are you in reading. You're done. You can read anything you pick up. We're
exactly.
good.
Exactly.
And that could happen at 7. I had one that did that by 7. Try finding age appropriate reading when at reading level when they're 7 and reading anything they can pick up. But I also had one that did it at 11. Mm-hmm. So because if you look at the studies say that reading finishes that last piece, which is you believing you can read.
Right.
Can happen anywhere between age 6 and age 12.
Yeah.
They've proven that. They've done the studies. Yet they still instead everyone learn to read by age 8. How does that make sense? Mm-hmm. If you've proven that cognitively, some brains aren't ready yet.
Right.
You have now just taught a whole normal section of children who are completely normal, who would completely be able to learn how to read if you just left them alone, that they're stupid.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Right.
Just to fit into a box that you've created to keep up. It's all about keeping up. We got to keep up with the, well, my 11-year-old can read as well as the one that learned at 7.
Mm-hmm.
He just took longer, but he can read no problem.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Why? Well, and then we make everything, all the other grades, all the other subjects based on reading. And then wonder why that same child is failing stuff, even though he knows all that information.
Yeah.
If you talk to him about that information orally, he can give you back all that information he couldn't write and put on that test paper.
Exactly.
But we fail him. We say he's failing and he's. Where do we draw the line and say, when is it about mastering information
mm-hmm.
versus
now?
When is it about that piece of paper?
The thing of it is so many have the book knowledge, but they don't have common sense and they can't bring that book knowledge into life.
Right.
Abigail used to look at her dad and say, so when am I going to ever use this? And so that's when Michael finally said, hey, if we can't make reality and show her where she can use it, throw that out and let's move on.
Come on.
You know, introduce her to it. introduce her to it. But let's keep moving. Mm-hmm. And that's where I am at this point. You know, if we can show them, then that's where we need to be building on. Algebra is another thing, but you unconsciously use algebra. And I don't like math, so Christina and I do not get along on that one. But and right, I never did. Michael was my math person. But you unconsciously use it in sewing. You use it in cooking.
Crochet.
And that was where Michael was able to show Abigail, you use it, just you aren't thinking X times this equals Y. You're not thinking on those story problems.
Right.
We use curriculum to a point, but neither did we say you have to learn the whole book here. And so many homeschoolers think you have a book here, you can do the whole book.
Mm-hmm.
And the school systems don't even do the full.
Right.
And if you know something, go ahead and jump it and go on.
Yeah. We used to.
But I think the reality has not set in that our kids are at home. They've got the hands-on learning, not just sitting and looking at a book all day, and we've got to learn it. And down the road, it's going to become sensible because we have to put it in life. Well, a lot of kids don't put it in life then.
We used to say, what is the purpose of school? The purpose of school is to teach you how to live life and how to survive as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
So if the purpose is to live life, if the purpose is to learn how to live life, shouldn't we be able to teach that information in life?
Right.
If we can't, then why are we learning it? Why not? What is it that's different that it can't be used in everyday life?
Why learn it then?
Yeah, for lower math. We use dice, we use cards, we use board games. My kids can do mental math so fast because 80% of what we did for lower arithmetic was going to the grocery store, adding up as we went, seeing how close we got, those kinds of things. And they didn't even know that they were different. Then they got into quizzing. And one of the things about when you're Bible quizzing is, can you keep track of where you guys are at points? Because you're not allowed to write it down. And my kids just knew, and everybody was always shocked that they knew what their score was. And they're looking at them like, how would we not know? You tell us. You know, because they were so used to doing mental math, it was automatic.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't something I taught them. There was no book on how to do mental math. Well, there is now. There is books on it, but we didn't do them. Things like that, but they were part of everyday life. My kids would often say, when people ask them, what do you do at school? And my kids would go, nothing. And I'm like, oh, because they didn't know that what they were doing was school.
It's funny you say that. The one thing I will step in and defend algebra, which is not my favorite subject, okay? Did that sound really diplomatic almost? and I'm just going to defend myself. I had algebra 1 and 2 and all of that in high school. When it came to college, we seriously had an issue. The one class I dropped was algebra, because the first week we had 41 videos, and I was like, I don't have time to even watch the videos before I could even get to the textbook and start solving problems. It was way too, so I do advocate, if there's a way that they can get algebra when in high school and college, let them dual enroll. That's one of my big things I would say, let people get it while they're young. But anyhow, here's the funny thing about algebra that I thought was interesting. Harold had, when he went to traffic homicide school, those, the X and the Y's and all of that, they had to use equations like that, formulas like that, to be able to tell. And they could tell by the dent in a vehicle the speed that another vehicle was going whenever they hit the vehicle. Now, that kind of intrigued me and actually captured me. My children also being the kids that they are homeschooling through the years, and that now they both are military, and they both are really high level with weapons. But they will tell you that, like, having to be able to figure the grains and, you know, all of the information, like, for loading bullets or doing whatever that is, that is totally something that is their job today. So it does matter in those things. But again, you know how, what made them do it in school? It was because it was more practical. It was more every day. You talk about the reading, we call them reading problems. When I was growing up, I hated it. I hated all that. I didn't do well with that when I was in school. When I went back to school after I had homeschooled through, 15 years of my life. When I went back to school, it was no problem. It was the strangest thing. It was like my brain could see the equation in real life. It was a different way of seeing. I remember when Matt was in third grade, I was like, could you please show your work? And some of you know what I'm talking about from school, where they tell you to show your work. I was like, could you just show your work? I don't know how you got that. And let's just make sure you got it right. But he would solve it in his head as he would read through the problem. And so for me, I didn't understand how he could get it like that at that young, but he always did, and Elizabeth did too. And so by the time they got through homeschooling me, is what I say, and I actually went to college, it was easier for me. Again, you know what? Let me just say this. It was a hole that I had in my education. You know, we're going to have some holes. They're going to happen. That's why I believe we have to equip the children with skills to learn all through the years, and encourage them, give them a delight in learning. Charlotte Mason said that education is a science of relationships. And that relationship, that when she's talking about that, she had a lot of her material she wrote on that. When she would say something like education is a science of relationships, or education must be a delight, she had a lot of writing on those things. And when she's talking about relationships, she was talking about relationships with God, with family, with mankind, with ideas, and and with learning. So she had that fullness of understanding that kids had to have more than just sitting and being a parrot, parroting back answers or parroting back ideas, you know, that were just fed to them. One of the problems we see with education today is the whole model is based on a model that's not an effective way to teach a child anything, really. When the founders of American education in particular said that it was a great perversion to teach a child to read, it breeds destructive individualism, then we shouldn't be surprised when they do not care if our children think, have a relationship with what they're learning, or where, you know, they're not discerning of propaganda that's inside of text. They don't know how to think and ask questions. Those are things that we can give them inside of a home and a home school that they should have. That they should have coming into the culture. They should be the kids who are asking questions. I remember when my kids grew up, this is kind of funny, one of my hard moments was when they made decisions as adults that I did not agree with. Now, you may say, Cindy, that is going to happen. Well, no. No, not my children, not my homeschooled children, you know, and much less, what? You're going to join the military? Do what? And so, but I remember literally saying, Matt, explain this to me. And he said, well, Mom, you have a big vision of where God's taking me, but he's given me stepping stones now. And so you're going to have to trust me. And you know what? That's what education in the end is. It's preparing them that they can actually take it over and they can make big decisions. They can go and you can firmly know that they're going to make good decisions because they make decisions at your knee. because they made decisions day in, day out inside your home. And because you saw how, again, you talk about failure, you saw them be able to pick themselves up from failures, as we might think that they are, but failure's never final. Unless we quit, you have not truly failed. You get a second chance or a 20th chance, whatever that may look like. You know, what was interesting to me, I remember telling my dad I was upset. It's part of a book that'll be out one day. I was not happy. My kids were just not doing what I expected them to do. And he told me, he said, Cindy, I want to ask you what you were expecting, because you trained them to be thinkers. You trained them to ask questions. You trained them to not settle for somebody else's answer, but to get their own. And Cindy, you're safe with that. Let them loose to be the great that they are. And he said, you know what? I've always trusted you with that. And it really humbles me, because that was a conversation that forever impacted me when my dad brought it back around and said, Cindy, I honored you. I respected you. I trusted you. I knew you would hit the mark. That brought me to a different level of parenting, which totally was the icing on the cake of homeschooling. And so I think that that brings us down to, you know, really getting a plan for this school year. This is a season where, this was my season where I always pulled aside. We began homeschooling this time of year. I remember going to my first convention. I couldn't wait till August. I'm that person who would open the presents in August instead of Christmas. That person, you know what I mean? But I would get so excited about the books, and I would get so excited about the things we were going to study. And so we just made a call to, during the summer when it was hot, we homeschooled. When it got pretty in the fall or it got pretty in the spring, we took those days to get outside. And we still called it school, by the way, because those were the days they could explore and they could just get out in nature. And it was applied studies. And but you know what? I'm so thankful looking back at, you know, those days where I could kind of get my systems into place. I could start the learning. I could research. And so this time of year is where I always recommend people to that are interested in homeschooling, really pull aside, get their plan, get evaluate where you are, where you want to be, anything that you need to troubleshoot, anything that you need that's working well that you need to keep on doing, anything that's past its season that maybe needs to be let go of. But then get ready and make a plan of that perfect school day in your mind, or the way that you can help and come alongside of them and support them. The areas that they really need to grow, the areas that, you know, maybe they are struggling, that maybe they just need some encouragement and they need some more practice. Whatever that is in this season, to really just take that time to get away, get a plan. God is not going to fail you. He's going to be there. He's going to help you. The one thing I can know on my personal level, like for my business or for my ministry, I always know he shows up, because he did it all through the years. I can say a hallelujah. He always did it for me. Because here's the thing. He was more vested in my kids' success and their graduation day, their life now. He knew exactly what they were going to need. He was more invested than I was. He had the knowledge that if, and I remember him even telling me many times, Cindy, if you knew that they were going to get past this, how would you respond? How would you be? Would you be rattled right now over this struggle, or would you just grin at, you know, get into this and decide to help them conquer this? You know, so anyway, I want to hear more from you guys. This is beautiful. I love it. Christina, take it.
Okay, I have to say something because you said something and now I have to say it anyway. Okay.
Go.
Perfect day. There is no such thing. There is none. Just get rid of that right now. But something that somebody told me to do once, and this, I would advocate it. Write down your perfect day. Write down your worst day. Now realize that most of your days are going to be somewhere in the middle of that.
Amen. Come on.
Most of them. Because you're not dealing with a robot.
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with a small human being. They are human. They have their own wants, desires, needs, will.
Come on.
And you're they're going to have that. You're interacting with a person.
Right.
You know, we take children, we stick them in a room with all their same age group. Nowhere else does that happen. When you go to work, you are not segregated by age. When you go anywhere else, well, except church, you're not segregated by age. Mm-hmm. You know, and we ask children to do things that we wouldn't ask other adults to do. And you have to realize that that's what you're in. You're in a family, you're in a group of human beings, a group of people. And so things aren't always going to go the way you want them to.
Right.
Because it's not just you. It's all of you. There are going to be fights. Imagine that. There's siblings in the same household all day, every day. How you handle the fights is where the learning is.
Right.
It's not that they're never going to happen, but how they get handled is the learning.
Mm-hmm.
How they learn to work together is the learning. How they, all of those things. So this idea that there's a perfect day, or this is what my child will look like at the end of my homeschooling. Just throw that out, because you don't know which direction it's going to go from year to year. We don't do adolescence in my household. It didn't exist until after the 50s, so we don't do it. Sorry. God set the adulthood at 13, not at 25. So don't tell me that a child isn't complete until 20. It just doesn't make sense to me. So at 15 in this household, basically you are treated like an adult. You make your own decisions. It doesn't mean I'm going to kick you out the door and you have to go now get a job and make all that work. It means that now you make your decisions where we can talk about them, but they're your decisions. So you can learn whether you can make those mistakes where you still have the safety net, where it's still not going to destroy your life because you don't have food in the cupboard, etc.
Yep.
But, you know, I watch so many homeschoolers who I've watched them do interest-directed learning, all of this stuff, and suddenly the child hits 13 and suddenly they tighten everything down and then wonder why the child is fighting back. And it's like, you taught him to be an independent thinker. He's now at the age, or she's now at the age, where God designed them to start thinking independently about what they want to do with their life. And you're telling them, no, you've got to do this. And you wonder why they're fighting you.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to rethink that strategy. It's not going to work. It's you have to keep in mind you're dealing with someone else's life. And they have some say in that because they are the someone else. It's, I don't know, sorry, got off track. But it's perfect day, non-perfect day. I think we learned more on the days that fell apart than on the days where everything went exactly how I thought it should go. Because when it went exactly how I thought it should go, it meant they actually just sit down and did everything really quick. And then suddenly we were at the end of schoolwork and it was 10 a.m. and we still had all day left. You have to fill that time, just saying. Otherwise, it disaster will happen. It just, especially for the new ones, the ones just starting, take a break. Rest. Relax, get to know your kids again. Get to know a routine that works to keep the household running. Get to know all those things before you pick your curriculum. Because until you know how your life is going to work, you can't figure out how school is going to work.
Very good.
So don't buy this oh, I got to go get all of Abeka. Nothing against Abeka, but I've got to buy the whole year's off. Well, we can go there, but I wasn't trying to.
I will, because I have nothing to lose in this pony show. But no, I think unless you're willing to do some thematic units alongside it, and unless you know that that is your child's learning style, no. You would come closer to knowing that most children are going to learn better through great literature, real life, real people. The majority of the children are going to thrive in those with that as their learning style, a learning lifestyle, versus mm-hmm. the child who is traditional. There are very few that literally love being able to fill in the workbooks and just do the textbooks and just do what's expected. Very few. I have, even with my children, what I saw is there was maybe a subject that they wanted that, but not every subject.
Right.
So just to throw that out.
Okay. 2 out of 10 who are that.
Yeah.
Would thrive, but only on certain subjects, like you said.
Yes. Yes.
We had a workbook burning party. Okay. At the Burn Barrel. when we lived in Iowa, and it was funny because, I knew what their favorite subject was by which book got hidden so that it wouldn't get burned.
That's awesome.
And which ones they brought out quite willingly.
That is funny.
It was funny. One of the things that, you know, I always planned a homeschooling, so I did so much study where my kids were still little before I even started. So I wasn't starting, and my kids never went to public school. So I didn't have that mindset from the beginning, but I had a lot of friends who pulled from public school. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that made the difference is, are you trying to do school at home, or are you trying to homeschool?
True.
They're different. They're not the same thing. School at home means I'm trying to recreate what they would do if they went to the school. Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm going to do that, why am I keeping them home?
Actually,
or am I keeping them home? I'm keeping them home because I want to learn with them, then it's not going to look like it did at school.
Yeah.
What is my purpose? Because that purpose will help design your homeschool. It's, you got to know that. It's the things that I had planned on my list that I wanted them to learn absolutely, and it's why we were homeschooling. Yeah, no. Because it was writing and math. And I love writing and math. And my kids learn to write at college. They read and read and read and read, so that foundation was already there. But the actual act of having to write a paper, they learned at college, most of them, or late high school. They didn't really write until, and they wrote fun things, but they didn't learn that academic writing till later. I have an English degree, okay? I love to write. It's so much fun. My kids are like, what? You want me to write something? I have to make something up and put it on paper. What? Now they can tell a story.
That's where you'll like the summer. You guys will like that because
I only have one left.
Yeah. Well, you never know. That's where.
And he's a math head.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't surprise me. But yeah, and I do want to go back to like perfect homeschool day. I think all the reason I say this is kind of has a story behind it. I remember at the point where I was ready to pull my hair out, and I am very much if you've done the DISC to learn your personalities and your temperaments, I'm very much the DI or the ID. Depends on what you're talking to me about. There's friends of mine who have degrees in this and have major studies that they've done, they're like, oh, you are clearly an ID. Well, it depends. If you also have other friends who know how I work and have had to be around me when I work, you would say you're a DI. So here we go. I think if you look at the numbers, I'm pretty equal. But because of that, when I began homeschooling, one of the problems I had, because I did have very set ideas of what I felt like my kids should be accomplishing and what they should be doing, for what that's worth, some of that quickly was crucified. And some of that, we had to work out our way of doing it. But the one thing that was causing us a lot of problems in our homeschooling, it's the reason that this fits with the productivity challenge. The problem that we had was there was not a structure to our day. There was not a structure that the kids could depend on that, hey, we get up in the morning. First thing we do is we have our quiet times. We get dressed. Then we do our chores. And that's before we even come sit at the table. Why? Because otherwise everything was a hot mess. Everybody's grumpy and everybody was, it was not the atmosphere I wanted for learning. By the time that they would get up, have a quiet time, get their baths or what, get dressed or whatever that looked like at whatever season, do their chores and then get to the table, they were much more ready to learn. And we had a table time. After table time, we had an afternoon where they could have productive free time. When I say be productive, that meant that pretty much they were still learning, but they were learning things they were interested in. They were playing. If they played nicely, if they didn't, they got extra assignments of different things. It wasn't school as much as chores.
Chores.
And you know, chores are the bad guy in our home. That was what we used. We didn't use math. We didn't use language as bad guys. But then, after productive free time, which was a large portion of the afternoon and going to the evening when I was having to cook and get everything ready for dinner in the evening, at that point in the evening, we would have family time. And that included our Bible reading, movies if we were going to watch some movies, reading great literature. It was just the family time. And so having that structure, it took me a bit before I was able to kind of have pretty clearly, this is what you can do, what you can't do whenever you're having your day, to where they had some structure to know what to expect in the day. When we got it into a routine and we got it into an order, it was amazing that they could take that and they could roll with that. But until they knew what to expect, until there was some semblance of order in the day, it was a free-for-all and it was total chaos. And everybody was mad. Everybody was irritated. And the worst of all was me. And so I remember one time I was telling Harold, I said, you know, I think I'm just not doing a good job. I think I'm going to have to put them back in school because this is not, we're not getting things done that need to be done. And Elizabeth, she looked at me and she said, but Mama, if you'll just tell us what to do, we'll do it. And I thought, wow, never could more truth come out of a mouth than that moment, because I didn't know what their day should look like. I didn't know what I really wanted for them to achieve in a day. They likewise had no clue what was really needed. And they could not, I mean, like on the days where things were going good, we would just do extra. Other days, they were just burnt out from the day before. It was just like there was no consistency. And having that day lined up of what I felt like, okay, this is what it looked like. Here's the thing about it. When we were on the road, if we had a different time schedule, we still knew get up, get ready, have your quiet times while everybody else is getting up, getting ready. We clean up, we pack up. If we're hitting the road, we hit the road. You still are going to do your table time in the car or where we get where we're going in the afternoon, be productive. And they were very productive. They would read more. They would copy things they couldn't get around to in school. They would play games. They would play outside. They would dress up. They would serve people. There was a lot of things that happened in that little sphere, but they knew what to expect, and it could roll with, like, you know, In the evening, we always had to go to bed, so we may as well read a story and quieten everybody down, get everybody settled down for the day, and have that family time. Those were things that were kind of our non-negotiables. They were the things that worked. And, you know, it's interesting. I still function by that structure, even now that I am an empty nester and even single. I mean, that's how I've been able to say, okay, these blocks of time make a difference for me. And it's looking at what makes it happen. You know, like this morning, first thing, of course, I had my soaking in worship and my time in the Word. And then I'll hit outside because I'm trying so hard to get into a habit of getting up, getting outside, start ending my day by going again, having, you know, a few minutes in the morning, a few minutes in the evening where I'm trying to get all of this back into getting healthy again. I have to do things like that, and it has to be very intentional or things just don't get done. They get lost. They get lost in the day. They get lost in the chaos that can happen. They get lost in crisis situations. And so if I'm not pretty intentional about making sure that what I really want is in the day, it doesn't happen. So that's where I'm coming from. When I say the word perfect, please don't be afraid of it. But I get what you're saying, because we do not want false expectations either, that our kids, if we do ABC, then our kids are going to be this. I highly caution for that. As a matter of fact, it almost gets to feeling like a spirit of witchcraft, where we think if we have the right potion we're mixing up, that they're going to happen to be a certain way. And there is no greater way to get down the path of true failure and a lot of chaos, a lot of problems, a lot of relational issues than to bring in that thing. And I know whenever my kids were, they were grown, I was still traveling a little bit. I saw a lot of people who had taught on parenting that when their kids got grown, or got to that age where, I mean, you're saying, I agree with you, 12, 13, they should be being self-driven. They should be pretty much leading the way with their homeschooling. Because here's the thing, even Charlotte Mason said this, that that a child has not really begun their education until they can actually choose for themselves and they actually use those skills. They get the skill to read, the skill to research, the skill to learn. And they choose to do that on topics of interest. That's when you know, and you can watch them, see where the holes are. You know, you're talking about writing a paper. Writing a paper does not assure you that a child knows how to learn. Writing a paper does not assure you that they've really got content that you're teaching. Last term, I had a teacher in school that class is probably the most, that class I probably took more from it than any class I've taken the whole time I've been in college. But the teacher, the questions were not like right now I've got a class that it's like, I can't even tell you how many questions they ask. And I'm like, where do you find all this? And like, we're reading at least 500, 600 pages a week. We're having uku. I can't even tell you how many videos last week. I think there were about 20. We're having to do all this and then finding and hearing all that content. It just makes me kind of go, really? Where if I were just able to take the notes, apply the learning, and really share what I know, what I'm getting from it, I probably would have arrived at a lot better of a result in the papers than where they're going with having the weird questions that they're asking. Last term, totally like that. I actually made 100 in that class, which means that without all of the driven stuff, I was getting above and beyond what I should have been getting to get to 100 in the class. That doesn't happen in your master's program. But anyhow, you know, going back to, you know, with your kids, hearing God for each one. What are your questions, you guys, that you have, or what are your experiences? Do you really believe that God has equipped you with the ability to hear Him, or for you to hear the scope and sequence that they have? Where are you guys landing on that? Come on.
Absolutely. I think I shared with you guys just briefly last night that we've graduated all of our, what my kids call my OG kids, because we've adopted as well, and our littlest is special needs. And she has totally changed my world, my everything, my thought process, my everything I ever thought I knew about homeschooling and parenting. And it's been a good thing. I wish I actually would have had her first. because I have to rely on God and I have to relax, you know, what my expectations are. I've thrown our schedule out the window. Just so you know, I'm an oldest child. I'm an accountant by trade. I'm totally type A. I'm a workbook learner. My kids, for the most part, were as well. So that was helpful for me. But our littlest, not a chance. We do some workbooks, but there's like no, it's not like we have to get this done today. Yesterday, for instance, we got started, got through just a few math problems. She's doing about first grade math. We're still learning our basics. And she just decided she is not going to do anything. And so we had a bath instead. You know, that's how my day looked. And then about 3:30, 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, she decided she wanted to go through some flashcards. She loves flashcards. She's very much a visual and
no math, even no with math, her reading. Kids. No math, kid.
Yeah, no. See, I'm with Christina. I'm a math nerd. So I know.
Love it.
So yeah, but then come, you know, 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, she pulls out her sight words and her phrase cards and her math flashcards, and she wants to sit down and go through it. And so I did, though. This is probably maybe about 18 months is all. She just turned 10, but we're maybe, you know, what I would officially call homeschooling of only about 18 months because she wasn't ready, which was fantastic. I didn't push her. I did. And I still do. I'm like, okay, God. And I mentioned just briefly last night that a lot of the brain dumping is I've just barely gotten started in this challenge has been God throwing ideas into my head about, oh, hey, this works for her. You know, this might help somebody else. You know, rethink how you did this. You know, we do math way different than we've ever done before. You know, Isabel sees things in shapes. So we work a lot with the numbers in dice form. Christina mentioned, you know, playing games and stuff. But she sees things. So when she does her math, I watch her process. And even if she's not sure, I watch her count the dice shape, which is fantastic. My other kids didn't need that. So anyway, all of that to say that I absolutely agree with you. It's amazing when you will just slow down and let God direct your schedule and let him feed you those ideas, which are totally foreign. Maybe you've never used before. Mm-hmm. You know, my youngest biological is 18. I've graduated all of them. And so we have a lot of years ahead of us. And it's going to be fantastic. And I'm actually more excited now about homeschooling than I think I even was 18 years ago when I started. Oh, so yeah. God is very good and very faithful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I love it because it seems like, okay, I think there's nothing to replace the fact of knowing that they're going to get it and that you're, you know, that they will graduate, they will learn. There's something about that that is a benefit that you don't have the first go through. Or the first right. kid through. But I love this that, you know, okay, you took away all the pressure for school to happen, and yet she's the one who was leading forward in it. That's beautiful.
Right. Yep. And just for cuteness, say hi.
Hey, how are you?
she's cute. A ham too.
She is cuteness.
Oh, she knows she's cute too.
Uh-huh. Love it.
I think our biggest problem in homeschooling is just like us women that look at each other and, oh, she does this for her husband, so I need to be doing this too. Or they're the perfect mom and they do it this way, so I have to do it this way. Each family is their own unit. And if I homeschooled my kids, even all three of my kids, the way that some think I should have, I would have been a mess because I had a special needs kid that we adopted, and he was clear different than any of the others. Mm-hmm. And then I had Abigail that she was too much like her dad and was way up here above me. And then Milton was totally different than everybody because he couldn't learn like all the others because of the brain damage. And I think we forget they're their own individual.
Right.
And you've got to look at them. Oh, yeah, I've heard this thing like Christina was saying, you know, we've got to do it all the different ways, so we must get lost. No, because it's just like parenting. You don't set them in a mold, or you shouldn't, and say, okay, you all three are from this family, so you've got to all do it this way.
Definitely.
Because they're not going to.
Right.
And if you do that, there's going to be a big rebellion. And then you're going to lose the child. And then you've got Miss Cindy's book on the heart of the child.
Guess I'll learn that one.
But you do. If you force them into the mold that you think you have to have.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we're failing a lot of times is we have the ideal overlook what schools have put us in. And so we have to do it this way. And instead, we don't gear them towards the direction they should be going. Mm-hmm. We aren't seeing where God wants them. Abigail used to say, just because I'm daddy's kid, they think I ought to be this. And I said, no, you are what God made you, not what we made you. And, you know, she hasn't found her niche totally. I think she has, but she hasn't gone that way. But I think we try to force them in the path we think they ought to go. And instead of opening them up and saying, what is your want? What do you feel like it?
Yes, come on.
And I think that's where we've lost a lot of homeschool people. Because you're seeing a generation that's coming up that a lot of them don't want to homeschool because they don't like their past. And I think that's where we've lost some of them because they've been shoved to be just like everybody else.
Right. Well, you know, I taught a lot of the kids' classes at conferences as well as the mothers and fathers. But interestingly, in my notebooking class, typically is where I really heard a lot of information that if homeschool mothers could hear it, we should just do another video. I can assure you it's no different, but because I just taught so many classes of kids that it was pretty obvious that this was, like, I remember one that probably taught 100 kids. And in the class, when the kids got to say what they wanted to learn about, you know what? No one said anything that was not pretty amazingly educational. They wanted that, but they just wanted the freedom to be able to dig in and soak in that. And it's the same way that I still learn things myself. And after being in school myself, I can tell you that my hardest thing in my family, they laughed. They knew it was going to be this way whenever I went back to school. They knew that my hardest thing was going to be that I was accustomed to digging in for the length, the breadth, the depth of everything that I studied. Anything we studied, we did that. And I did that on a personal level as well as a homeschool level, a business level. That's just how I do things. You can probably see that a lot in how I do things. But being in school, there was not the same thing. And I remember when Matt, this is kind of funny, when he joined the military, he wrote me this letter. He said, Mom, I am not learning anything in these classes. He said, I don't remember nothing. He said, I can't remember a thing. They keep telling us stuff and I'm just forgetting things. And it was interesting because I had done a lot of study on the effect of stress and learning. And this is before school. And even school has backed it up, you know, with what we've studied in courses that, you know, when I've studied things I've had. But the stress shuts you down. So in other words, when we do have a like something that is really hard to teach our children and we're kind of freaked out about it, it's going to be harder for them to get it. That is the reality. Or if we're pushed to try to make a certain grade on a certain something or a certain score, that's going to just filter right down upon the children. And it's like they just shut down. That just shuts them down just as much as it does us. I had a test a while back. Oh my goodness. It was the worst test I've ever taken in my life. I was totally prepped for it. I studied and studied. And whenever I had all the questions that I had to review in my, I have some different programs that I use when they would test and when I would test it during my commutes and stuff, I knew all the answers. But I get down to the wire to take the test, and I realize it was like 120 questions. It was going to be 2 hours at minimum that test was going to take for us to get through the test. Oh, my goodness. I can't even tell you how stressed out that made me, because it was more than that. For 120 questions, it was going to be more like 4 hours if you were really honest with it. Or 3 at the minimum. And I was so stressed. It was like my brain couldn't even read the questions for a little bit until I just chilled out, prayed over it, and then finally it's like I could see and start taking the test like I should. It was a very stressful moment. I think that really woke my eyes up to the effect that stress can have on you when you're trying to learn. But Matt ends up, here's the funny thing. He came back around and he said, once he started getting more sleep, he was able to do some other courses that were not like boot camp. It was like he finally felt like he was learning the things he loves. And it was interesting. It was just interesting to watch. But here's what he said he got the most out of those classes where he was stressed out. He's airborne, just like his sister who is jumping out of airplanes today. Y'all pray for her. She's got a night jump even tonight, so be praying for her tonight. But anyhow, he said that one thing he learned when he was in those classes, they made them sit at attention and their legs had to be locked together, their ankles together, everything. And he said that it didn't really hit him just what those classes were really teaching him until he went to airborne and they wanted him to have things so a habit, so a way that he operated, that when he jumped, he was in position like that. It was automatically locked where he wouldn't get hurt. And he said it was all about that, you know. And there's things that they learn, don't get me wrong. But he was very frustrated. And yet, it was a good lesson to know that sometimes the lessons aren't what you think they are. There are other lessons. It's kind of like, I think, with homeschooling. You know, sometimes it's not about a certain grade level, it's more the skill, or maybe sometimes it is the information that they're developing a fondness of. I remember Matt's love for history really took root when he was 7. And it was a year he was really stressed. He himself, he's very type A, a perfectionist through and through. He is like a carbon of me in many ways. And he was very frustrated because his handwriting didn't look like he wanted it to look like. And you could see, as he began to copy work, you can see the shifts that he had where he realized this was truly his notebook. It was his special copies of things that really meant a lot to him. It was like the pressure. You could see the pressure in his writing during the very first few weeks. And you could see things lightening up. And you could see him really taking delight when he had a place to put it. He had those pages were protected. They weren't just raw in a notebook. It was like when we started seeing those things that supported him and I could support his learning rather than me having to drive the learning, that made a world of difference in where he went with it the rest of the years. And he'll even tell you, I remember him calling me when he had got selected to be a Green Beret. Now, by the way, the numbers, I mean, seriously, they're like the 3% of the military or less. that actually get selected. And then they have to go through the whole program, another, what is it, a year, 2 years, I forget how long. And then they have to actually be selected for a team. So the numbers are like real minimal of those that make it. If 100 people go out, you know, for selection, 3 make it. I mean, that's the numbers. And they pride themselves on that. It's that strenuous. They called me after he had been selected, and he was in tears of delight. He was so excited. He said, "Mom, I just want to thank you, because if you had not taught me through the years to be self-driven, I would have never made this." And he said, you know, it was being self-driven that got him through all of the stuff that he had to go through to actually finish the exercises, finish on time, finish well. It was all of that that was, that's not an academic thing where he said, "I needed to know algebra," per se, not at that point. He uses it now in some of his calculations and some of the things he does, but it wasn't that. It was character that was driven through the disciplines of life, the discipline, the being productive each and every day. You know, you're talking, someone said earlier about their child, you know, given some things, they would get finished at 10. I think it was you, Christina, that they would get finished at 10 in the morning, and things would just be slapped down on paper, blah, blah, blah. I've seen that too. I remember telling the kids, "Okay, I want for you to be self-driven." This was early on. And I remember one time Matt showing his copy work to his dad, and his dad going, "Looks to me like you're skimming by. You're just trying to do what you can do to get by. You're not really bringing excellence in this." The next day he copied a whole page, and it was so beautiful. It was so neat. It was so well done. And it was just a character issue. And there's also that of us having to sometimes say the tough stuff to our kids when they're growing up, and say, "Hey, this doesn't look like you're bringing me your best." Now, I also remember instances where, again, Matt was the kid who liked the textbooks for math. Elizabeth, not so much. She was more the teaching textbook kid who was very hands-on, kind of a little more unschooly in the way she approached things. I say still a lot of her education was unschooled because she just was out of the box, and I love her for that. She taught me more about education than anybody on the planet could have ever taught me. But now Matt, he liked his textbooks. He liked knowing what he had to do. And one day he came to me and he asked me, you know, he said, "Okay, do I need to do all these problems?" And he was using Saxon math. And I said, "Okay, where are we with this? You know, when you checked your work, you've got 100% on what you did. How about if you see a concept that you have down and you don't feel like you need to practice it, you can do the ones that are the new problems and maybe do a few practice problems. If you feel like you need some practice, do odd or do even, or you can keep on practicing. If you keep on, that's part of this process, is you being able to continue practicing it till it becomes something you know when you look at it." So he comes back to me, and he always after that point did middle to, like, he would do it, like, his minimum was pretty much, you know, like, picking odd or even for the most part. Not really. It was at least over half of the problems they had in the assignment. But many times he brought in all of it if he was trying to learn something. And he was very, very good and honorable about not skimming by, but getting the very, you know, not bringing by the least, but bringing actually more than he should have, probably. I would have let him not have to do as much. But it was about that place of him taking responsibility for his education and it not being something, "I'm driving this and I'm pushing this." There has to be some of that that starts to transfer. And I think some of that starts when they're young, honoring them, loving them, supporting them, encouraging them, letting them have very clear expectations, but also giving them some freedom to start picking some things. Like when we were talking about language arts over the summer, there's a point where, you know, they're at a phase where they may need some things that are just for them to copy that are not stuff they have a relationship with. But it doesn't take very long into that before, I mean, sometimes they still need provision of resources when it's a, what I call a no-brainer day. I have a no-brainer days too, where I don't want to have to think. I just want to do. And I like knowing what I got to get done and it being already pretty much chosen. I'm like that even with my devotions sometimes. But there's something beautiful about taking responsibility. And I'll never forget some of the quotes when Matt would say, "Mom, listen to this." I remember one in particular, Stonewall Jackson. It's one of my favorite stories of him. But I remember him finding it and coming in tears. And he said, "Mom, this is so good." And then I also remember him being over in Iraq and me going, "Matt, I just miss you. I'm having to pray hard here." And he said, "But Mom, you know, I don't think God's done with me." Remember Stonewall Jackson? And he starts quoting the quote. He was like, what is that, 23, 24, 25 years old? And he's still quoting a copy work lesson that he found back when he was 8, 9 years old. And he found it actually in a real book that Stonewall had written some letters to his wife. So it was like an autobiography that a typical 8 or 9 year old would not necessarily find themselves reading. But he asked for permission to do that, get this, in that productive free time. And when he found that quote, it's still special. It is still special. Not too long ago when he was in Afghanistan, I heard him say it again. That, you know, when, if God, I just believe God's still got something for me to do. And I feel like I'm safe, as safe on the battlefield as I am in my bed. And I think about the power of literature to go that many years. It takes, I believe, a relationship with it and a freedom that they have to dig into some things that they can learn to love and pursue. Elizabeth was not as inspired along the lines of history. She liked it because Matt made it a lot of fun. But her thing, she always loved more scientific things. She loved art and music. And Matt, he liked those things, but he was so into history and so into ideas and worldview. There was just a big difference. But you know what was awesome? The fact that they were doing life together, being family, I believe they plugged the gaps. They plugged the holes. The enthusiasm one had in one area and the enthusiasm another had in another area, because of relationship, they were excited to learn together. I was just talking to Whitney earlier today, and I told her about a memory that just really was so cute about Matt and Elizabeth. And what it was, I remember we were reading some biography of, it was an autobiography or a I don't remember. It was a story of Daniel Boone and Elizabeth Boone. And they had their little dress-up clothes and stuff. And I remember Matt, the night before we started reading the book in our family time. And so that morning he said, "Could you read us the next chapter, Mom? What we want to do, we want to go outside and we want to play. And we want to play Daniel Boone and Elizabeth Boone." He said, "So Elizabeth, pay attention. You're going to be Elizabeth Boone." And so we read the next chapter, and then all of a sudden they make a beeline out the door, and I can hear them because the windows were all open. It was like that time of year that was really pleasant. And I heard him out there. He said, "Okay, Elizabeth, I say this, you say this. I say this, you say this. Then I say this and you say this." He said, "Go." And it was so delightful. They took and they found all kinds of branches and built themselves a fort outside. They built themselves their, quote, cabins out there on the property. They played for hours and hours, and overhearing what they said, it was amazing what they were taking from their lessons. Way more than if they'd had to write a paper, if they'd had to take a test, they were getting it, and they never lost it. I remember we used timelines, and I remember Harold's grandmother coming to the house. She was a little like, "Well, why do you answer the phone in the middle of the school day?" "Because you called in the middle of my school day is why I answered the phone." And she came over for dinner one day and she saw the timeline. We had big Konos timeline on the wall. And she said, I was cooking and I heard her like asking the kids, so did you study this person? And they said, yeah, that's Helen Keller. And they told her all the details of Helen Keller. And she said, well, what about this person? And I don't remember who it was, but they went and told all kinds of details and things they were excited about learning. She was like, whoa, well, what about this person? And she thought she was going to trip them up. No, they knew everybody. They could remember the details. And it so beat the education I had growing up that it made it to where I believe it was just so much more than education. It was so much more than another option. It was a life. It was a life. And it was a life that has, if I look at everything, it prepared them perfectly for where they are in life. There was no accidents. There was no accidents that they were in my home. God trusted me to be able to hear him for them and to give them the life, the home life, the education, the plans, the thing, to even have times where he backed me up and I couldn't do certain things at certain points. I remember being sick, miscarrying. Education didn't stop when mom didn't feel good. The real education really took place with me out of the way a lot of times, but it was real. It was the real thing. And it was something that if I had to do it all over again, I would definitely do it all over again. I would probably not be as stressed. I mean, I'm thinking about you, Kelly. There's got to be a benefit to you coming after you finished with another child and being able to go back into that wonder of learning with a child. That's precious. It's kind of like what I'm doing with grandchildren right now. I have a 9-year-old grandchild and a 4-year-old grandchild, and they are just so funny. You know, it's fun to be a part of the journey and watch them grow and learn. But it's so much more than education. It's so much more than school. And as a matter of fact, I think education and school get in the way. And so, anyway, feedback, my friends. you know I'm going to get off on some of that stuff and talk too much.
I think our big deal, too, is, at least from personal experience, I enjoyed college a whole lot more because I chose what I went into.
Right.
And so I was driven to do it. And I know with Abigail, the one thing that I pulled away from when we did journaling, I refused to grade it. Wow. I'd read over it, but I refused to grade it because if I grade it, then she went for perfection, not her heart.
Wow.
And so I totally completely, you know, this is journaling time. Yeah, I'll read it to make sure you've done it. Mm-hmm. And it came out when she was overseas in Israel. She made the comment, she says, Mama, I went back to my journaling times because I could just write what was in my heart. And it didn't matter if it was punctuated or right or not. It was my heart.
That's
and she
thing.
Said, I don't think I would have been able to do it if it would have been, I have to do it perfect. And she was a perfectionist. She is a perfectionist. And it really irks me at times. But her heart was in it. Whereas,
somebody
whereas, you're doing it day by day by day and forcing them. And that was where my whole deal was in college, I could pick and choose what I wanted to do.
That's what you do when you put your mic up. You got to remember to pull it back down. That was one of the things for us that was a big deal as well. I wanted to find their passion, their bent. What are they heading towards? But I also wanted them to be able to find it. So there are kids where I can tell you where their bent is. I can tell you what they're good at and what I think they should go for. But that I don't necessarily tell the kid that because they have to find it. If I find it, it may not be right. I might not be right. Heavens, you know, I'm not perfect. But also, they won't have a vested interest in it if it's not their interest, if it's not their choice, if it's not their decision. I went to college at 18 for engineering and for physics. Well, it was engineering, physics, and then it was physics. I like math and science. It's not like I didn't. But I did it because at that time period, if you were a girl and could do math and science, you owed it to your gender to do math and science. Okay, that's why I went for math and science. I did like it. I was good at it. But no one told me that everybody didn't get A's in writing. No one told me that English wasn't automatic for everybody else on the planet. That they didn't read a poem once and know exactly what the person was trying to say. It never occurred to me that my easy A was my bent. I just thought it was easy for everybody. And I didn't learn that that wasn't so until after I was married and my husband was trying to write a book. And he's talking about how writing is so hard. And I'm like, wait, what? Writing's not hard. It's just something you do. It's you just sit down, you write. Isn't that how it works? He's like, no. I'm like, oh. And I had to go back and think about it. And that's one of the fallacies of grades. One of the fallacies of we all have to be good in everything. Well, guess what? There isn't a there's very few people on this planet that are actually good at everything. You will have your genius area. You will have your one area that you naturally excel in, that you naturally like, and that you will do whether someone makes you do it or not. Back to like those workbooks. I knew which one they were good at or which one they loved by what didn't get burned. My daughter just laughed in the background because she wasn't here for that earlier part of that conversation.
Well, with Abigail, she hated reading. She hated to read. We fought. She did not want to read until I made her tell me about things that she really wanted to learn more about. And horses were her love at that point. And so for Christmas, man, we bought every horse book there ever was. My sister, she just delved into it. I mean, we had horse books all over this place. And that child started reading, and now she can't put a book down. In fact, she carries one to work with her.
I had a child that did not like fiction. I had to get him nonfiction books for him to read. He does not like fiction. He still doesn't. And it was after ones that, you know, pretty much if I handed them a book, they were going to read it. It was very weird to not be able to find him something he would read because he just wasn't interested in stories. He wanted to know things. He wanted facts. Okay.
Encyclopedia.
So we got kids nonfiction books. But it was kind of funny because the librarian tried to tell us we were in the wrong area. I'm like, he wants nonfiction. I'm not in the wrong area. This is what he wants. Just chill. I had to fight with the librarian. He really is in the right place. But, you know, that was the thing is they. I had to let go and look at what does my child like to learn? What is their bent? What do they want? They don't need everything. They don't need to ace everything. They need a general knowledge of everything, but they don't have to be a little encyclopedia who can rattle off something in every category.
Yeah.
They need to have the time to explore what is it that they like so that when it comes to that decision point, what do I do in college? There's no question.
Right.
They know what to do in college because they know what they love and they go and they major in that. It's It's that whole concept of, what am I teaching them? I'm teaching them that their responsibility is to learn. Mm-hmm. I've taught them how to learn, and their responsibility is to find what they want to learn and go for it. It's their responsibility, not mine. Just like when they get to college, it's not their teacher's responsibility, it's theirs. The teacher gives them the guidelines and they're supposed to run with it. It's a balance, but it's, once they've learned how to learn, there's no stopping point. Mm-hmm. It's not I got my high school diploma and I'm done. I don't have to learn anything ever again. No, you learn throughout your whole life. There's always going to be something new to learn.
That's why we say that learning begins at birth, because you are teaching that baby from the time, well, even us that read to our babies beforehand, we're teaching them from the womb up. And my mama used to say, well, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. And then that backfired on her. She was never going to touch a computer ever. Well, that's how she talked to us in the last days, because she could not talk. And so she depended on an iPad. But we learn throughout our whole life. But if we're put into a mold, you do resist. And it's going to be that way. You learn the way you want to do it.
Well, and if you spent all that time getting straight A's, do you know what you like? Or do you think you have to go with that thing you struggled for? The easy one can't be the one, right? Mm. That's how I was.
Right.
The easy one wasn't the one I went for. I went for the one I had to fight for. But that wasn't my natural bent at all. When I went back to school this last time, I went for English. I wanted math, but, you know, they don't expect you to want English and math. So all the classes were at the same time. I couldn't double major. And I picked English because, honestly, you know, I love writing. I'm weird. I like writing essays and papers. I love discussing literature. You want to talk about books? Hey, I'm right there. It's who I am. And it's not hard for me, it's easy for me. But I think that's part of what made it hard for me to teach my kids, because it is so natural to me. It's not something I have to think about. I don't sit down and think, okay, I need to work on that sentence structure. I write the structure. It's automatic now. You know? So it made teaching them harder.
Yeah.
But they have those same things. There is no such thing as a child without a genius area. Every child has a area that is natural to them, that is part of their learning, that is part of their bent, that is part of their internal makeup. That seed is there to begin with. That if you give them that and let them run with it, a lot of the other subjects can be learned in that. Mm-hmm. Like you said, with the horses. She was learning all kinds of stuff while learning the horses. We did that with one of my children as well, learning the parts of horses. It made her write, et cetera. You have to find those things that you can interlock that still encompass, not a great word, cover all those other things, but still within that interest. So they can run with it. And then you look at it and you go, wow, they learned way more than I thought they were going to, because I didn't know all that. You know, I learned so much homeschooling my kids because I didn't learn phonics until I taught my oldest child. I was a look-say kid, but I just had a really, really good memory. So I learned to read fairly easily, but I didn't learn phonics. So guess who didn't learn how to spell? Mm-hmm. So in third grade, I'm sitting there and my teacher's going, I'm asking how to spell a word. And they say, go look it up. And I'm like, but I don't know how to spell it. They're like, well, sound it out. I never understood what that meant until I was 25 years old and I'm teaching my son how to sound it out because I finally learned phonics. I was so mad. I spent like 3 days so mad at my teachers because they understood because they had phonics, so they knew what they meant by sound it out. But if you haven't taught me the sounds of the letters, how am I supposed to sound it out? So to me, telling me to look it up in the dictionary made no sense. I don't know how to spell it. I need to know how to spell it to look it up. I don't know how to sound it out. So my spelling was horrible up until maybe high school. And it got really way better after I taught my son how to read because I learned phonics. Those are the kinds of things that, you know, people try to tell me, well, I don't have a degree. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do that. You learn as you go. You only have to stay half a step ahead of the person you're teaching for it to work. You don't have to be in geometry while they're in algebra to teach them algebra. You have to be through the next chapter to teach the one before it. It's sequential. Or you go find the person that knows how to do the algebra and loves math, and you let them teach your child. Those things that you can't teach, you go find the person that can. It doesn't have to be, I've got five subjects and I'm sitting down and I'm teaching them all. No, go find the expert. Go find the person that knows what they're doing and likes to teach math and go have them teach. And maybe you're good at teaching English and you swap. Is it the end of the world? No. Have you failed as a homeschooling mom? No. The point is to get the information. The point is to teach them how to learn. And the point is to let them run. Done.
That's some good stuff. Julie, did you want to jump in? I haven't heard. Well, she's not there, is she? Okay, I don't see her. Okay.
Sorry, my husband just showed me.
So good, you guys. I love it. I just want to thank you for an amazing session today because I just feel like that this is where it gets down to the nitty gritty of what this is really about. It's not what so many people think of when they think of homeschooling, but it's because each of us have done this for a long time and we've seen you've got to get past some of the things that are going to be obstacles for you with education and just dare to teach the child, valuing the child, loving your child like only you as a parent can love them. And so I just appreciate this. Thank you, Christina. This is really good. And thank you, Arilla. Thank you. You guys are just so amazing. I just love it. To me, that's just more of the power in community with everybody sharing. This is what I've done. These are the mistakes I've made. These are the things that I feel like I did well, you know, that, and I think that this is just powerful. So we have sessions tomorrow that are pop-ups. I would love to invite you guys to come for those. Tomorrow we have a 3 p.m. where we're going to have Barbara Mitchell. Barbara was one of the heads with Chef of Louisiana Homeschooling Group, the Christian Home Educators of Louisiana. That's how we first met, if I'm not mistaken. She may have found me before that point, but I think she had to have. They booked me. So I'm looking forward to hearing some of that. But also her children are some of my very best friends in life. Micah will be here probably next week or the week after. And Micah and Carrie are wow, is all I can say. And then, of course, her beautiful daughter, Katie, she is a powerhouse as well. And Micah and Katie were Matt and Elizabeth's buddies growing up. So you can only imagine how much they are very, very dear. Micah and his wife, Carrie, I consider them dear friends. They inspire me. There is Miss Julie. Julie, did you want to jump in before we wrap today? Did you have anything on your heart? No? Okay. She's doing this. I love her so much.
No pressure.
None at all. But okay, then we also have Jeffrey Hardwick who will be here tomorrow night. Man, You guys, bring your friends and family for this. Jeffrey is, he sent me, I got the details here. He sent me the handouts for tomorrow night. We're going to learn how to recognize God all the time. And I'm telling you, this dude is the one you want to learn from. It's learning how to hear God to discover and live your purpose. I can't wait for that. And so seriously, this is one of those that you may even want your sweethearts with you on that session. It's going to be really good. Then Thursday night is me again. We're going to talk about business and ministry. We're going to talk about getaway and get a plan for that. So I'm really looking forward to that as well. Next week, we've got, I think Lucia's on the mic. Next week, we've got some good stuff. The pop-ups are so powerful in this because we're talking about getting down to the nitty-gritty of how we can really be productive and be on target. You know, we're not looking at wasting time and energy just doing just anything out there. We're talking about doing the things that are really important. And so I hope that you guys have some good takeaways from this today. I'm just fired up hearing you guys. And I just want to thank you for stepping up and sharing, because this is only as great as the participation. So be sure to go into our group, by the way, real quick, talking about participation. Log in what you're doing or whatever in the group. Also, one of the things I asked different this time was to share with video when you got some of your challenges done. If you want to go and even share like some of your big takeaways that you had here today or some of the big things you shared today, I would love for you to do that. Just there's something about getting to see your face and hear your voice that to me just makes this so special. So, if you don't want to, Christina's shaking her head. No. Yeah. Hear ya.
Can I write it? Can I just write it, please?
You can. You can. You just get double points if you don't. If you do the video. So, I love.
I'm okay with that.
That's funny. That's really funny. Okay. This is how this is going. I see. seriously, I love that. At minimum, do some here and there, you know, because there's just something about getting to see and get to know each other. And goodness, we got, what is this, almost 600 people in the group. And, you know, there are a lot that they do watch the replays. There's a bunch that watch the replays. But I just, even if you're watching the replay, I want to just call you. Come and join us, at least on some of it. I should make a requirement. You have to join at least one of the lives to get to finish your challenge. We're going to probably do that next time, because there's just something about getting in community, making the relationships, and letting people know who you are, what you do, what you need, because you just never know. You just never know who is in the group and what they may need. They may need your business. They may need your ideas on homeschooling. They may need your ideas for scheduling or whatever your thing is. I don't think it's by accident we're all together. Let's just put it that way. So anyway.
Question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so on the post for the daily, does mm-hmm. it have to actually be done on the day? Or can I go back and post some of those? Because I've been keeping track of what I did each day, but I haven't posted at all.
Sure. Do that.
Okay. Yeah, I won't do it all at once. I'll do it over time because I have like 8 days worth.
That's okay. Yeah. I think that would be good because I would love to see what all you've been doing too, because I know you've been really doing a lot of stuff. And oh, yeah. So it would be cool to see that, you know. I just love it. I love when, you know, to me, that's the thing that helps me measure my success too, is am I really helping? Are we really being productive? I mean, goodness, in a productivity thing. So it helps me to know that we're really being productive. And I know that there are a lot that are like listening on replay, and there was an issue. I told Arilla before everybody came in, I did not push record a second time. Remember, I paused it when I was doing something. I was having problems getting it onto Facebook or something. And I pushed pause, and I didn't push it to record again. And I was like, oh, it's that first session we didn't get it. It's on Facebook, but it wasn't in a recording. And so I was like, oh, me. So, you know, some of that held back the replays. And so the replays are about to go out. And so everybody will be catching up on everything. So, anywho, I'm excited. Y'all, I hope you have an amazing evening this evening. And if you need anything in particular, let me know so that, you know, we just make sure that we address the things that maybe you're struggling with, the things that you're trying to make happen right now. It's like I was saying, even myself, one of the things I'm working on is trying to get fit and healthy. And we have people in our group that are the people, the gurus in that area. And it's just such a blessing to have some of them step in and say, hey, here's something that would work good for you. And so just whatever you bring it and bring it to our group, because there's so much that I think is amazing. It could be that there's one other person that needs it, or it could be that the whole group may need it and you didn't even know. So let's do this thing. So y'all have a great evening. And tomorrow I look forward. I will be over at Donna Ammon's little cute cabin house. I'll be recording there tomorrow. I cannot wait. That place is so cute. It makes my heart happy. And so you'll get to see how pretty it is. What I may do is take the camera around so y'all can see how pretty it is in there. And I don't know if we're painting beforehand. I got to message her and see if we're going to be painting before. I've got this vision of something I want to paint. I don't paint, you guys. I'm stepping out here on a limb. I just know I've got to do it with her holding my hand. But she does these painting classes with Brush with Jesus. If you haven't seen those and you want to do some painting, oh my goodness, they're amazing. But we're going to do like an online something. I don't know if it'll be this week or next week or when. I've got a book that I'm finishing called that it may not be like right now, but she had this one painting that I fell in love with it when I saw it. It was of an angel, but the angel's skirt had like words that were in there that spoke identity. And it was so beautiful. What I saw was, I was thinking what would be beautiful, because God keeps giving me that passage of scripture about being the prepared bride for the kingdom. I could see like a bride and her dress having the words that Christ speaks over us. So I want to do that, and it'll make more sense when you see what Donna's done with it. I'm so excited about that. And so she promised me that she would help me see how I can do this. And I think we're going to do it as a project. But she's done like a study on Esther, and she's done she's done little sheep. She's done all kinds of fun projects. She did some crosses the other day that were beautiful. I actually think I could do that. And so I'm learning some new things, and I plan to practice some. So I don't know if we're going to be going live with that. I got to see if she's up to paint with me tomorrow. I think that she always is up to paint. So maybe we'll play, or we may do it another day. I don't know. But anyway, but we'll be filming from there tomorrow. I'm so excited. And I'll show you how beautiful the place is. I just want to live there. Like, except I know she'd be on to me, you know, like if I never left. So anyhow, well, you guys have an amazing evening or day, whichever that is for you. And thank you for being you. You're awesome. I love you. So have a good day. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.